Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This week's Lord's Cricket podcast is with Graham Onions. Graham played 9 tests for England between 2009 and 2012, taking 32 wickets at an average of just under 30. It's arguable that 9 tests was 9 tests too few, but in a career disrupted by injuries, he achieved a lot and he's got some great memories. A 5-wicket haul on debut here at Lord's, winning the Ashes in 2009, where he caught the eye of pop star and celebrity cricket fan Lily Allen. And he delighted England fans with some gritty rearguard batting action against South Africa that following winter. All of this is discussed in the podcast and much, much more. I caught up with Graham, who's now plying his trade for Lancashire, earlier this summer. At the time of putting this podcast out, Graham's actually the leading wicket taker in the county championship. In Division 1, he's got 56 wickets at an average of 21.42. It's fair to say that the old boy's still got it.
And I checked in, I turned round and I walked Duncan Fletcher, he was walking towards me and I was like, oh my God, that's Duncan Fletcher. So I walked over and he literally walked straight past me.
You're listening to the Lord's Cricket Podcast with me, Will Rowe. These are the stories from the home of cricket with the people that made them. Graham Onions, absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. How are you doing?
Good, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Have you ever done a podcast before?
I did one for my benefit, yeah. So yeah. During my benefit, yeah, with somebody from the Chronicle. And basically, he would publicise the events that I had, and then I would talk throughout my 10 most important games type of thing. And probably quite similar to this, but I'm obviously expecting this to be a lot better.
Well, hopefully.
No pressure.
Well, no pressure at all, and certainly we're going to chat about one of those games. You're 35 now, you're still enjoying the game?
Yeah, I love it. Soon to be 36, which is strange. I mean, the time just flies by. I think at some stage it will obviously catch up on me and it'll just be too hard to do, I think. So at this moment in time, I'm enjoying it. I mean, obviously, I think the move has slightly helped the passion and the drive a little bit. And I mean that as in the point of the winter that I've just had and the fitness that I've always done, but this winter has been a lot more emphasis on being a lot fitter and stronger.
Are you sad to have left Durham? Because, I mean, that was a county that you were so closely associated with. You came up through the ranks. You're a Durham boy. I mean, the accent gives it away.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good to do these type of things because you speak honestly. And I think I've done interviews in the past where I've been a little bit probably disappointed with the way I was treated at Durham, but also very lucky to be given an opportunity to join such a great club. And look, I go on to BBC or go on to Crick Info and I check Durham score straight away. You know, that's my club. Do I miss it every day? All the time? You know, I got given an amazing opportunity when I was a young kid to be brought up in the northeast and just to play and get given an opportunity to try and live a dream as such. I wasn't the type of person that thought, oh, I want to play for England, that's what I want to do. I actually just played for the fun of it. I was quite a late developer. I played club cricket under 13s, 15s, 17s, but had no idea the potential that I had and how good I could possibly be.
Graham Onions may not realise the talent he has for cricket, but one person does. His coach at Durham, Jeff Cook, sees something special in this young, skinny kid.
I turned up for a trial and we got stuck in traffic while late, and my dad, I can't actually remember this, but my dad tells the good story, hence the reason why this isn't being taught very well. But we were about 10 minutes late, we're sitting down in like a centre of my room, and Jeff was just talking about Durham, the county, and how young it was, and the pride that you've got to have to play for the club. And I turned up 10 minutes late, and of course I didn't really think a great deal of it. I was just thinking, well, I'm just going to enjoy my cricket. And he said, my dad, I'll never forget, said this, Graham, sit down, said you're going to play for England one day. And he said, right lads, this lad's going to play for England one day. And I, honestly, I cannot remember that, but my dad tells the story, and I was like, to have that judge of character and person, that I promise you, I could ball quick, but I was rubbish.
How old were you when he said this?
I was trialing. I think I was around about 16.
Did you feel pressure from that sort of?
Well, I can't remember it, so obviously, obviously not. I just enjoyed the game. I remember a couple of things that Jeff said. Was you make bowling look very easy? And I said, well, I just like to feel the ball coming out of my hand, and I had like an idea of what I wanted to do, but I just didn't have the skill to actually put it there. Obviously, the hard work that I put in kind of got the best out of me, really.
Let's go back a moment. Graham was born in 1982 in Gateshead, in the northeast of England. Proud of his background and community, he's the youngest of two kids. His elder sister, Christine, puts up with her little brother, but they have a close bond.
Yeah, very much my best friend, really. I annoyed her a lot. She without a doubt, got the brains of the family. although she had the sporty gene as well, I think I got the more natural kind of, trying to say this the nice way, like the wiry mechanics that go with, especially with fastball, and where I get my pace from, because I'm certainly not built what people would see as a fastballer. I mean, someone like Dale Benkenstein, I bowl some quick spells, and you'd say, well, how are you actually bowling quick? And that's obviously, as you get older and you do your level 4 coaching badges, you start to realise why that happens. But my sister was sporty. She was very intelligent. I remember we had a piano, which my sister played. I could never play it. And next to it in the house was a wardrobe. And I would literally cricket bag in, badminton rackets out, badminton rackets in, cricket. And I was just, it was constantly. Mum and Dad would shout at me saying, tidy the cupboard, you know. And I was like, well, I just loved playing all different sports. And I think that probably helped me in the end. But I still worked pretty hard. I still got my GCSEs. Yeah. I still did... the GMVQ, so I could concentrate more on me sport. A lot of the stuff that I did and the hard work that I got was without a doubt from my mum and dad, both very, very hard working people. My dad worked shifts for, you know, he left school, worked shifts, and he started off making suits when he was younger, and then went to drive metros and trains, worked shifts all of his life. Mum, a nursery nurse. And that's long hours as well, and a lot of hard work that goes into it. And I think that's from my parents, but I think it's also a lot of people from the northeast have got this naturally in them. You know, they're sometimes cast as people. They're just people in the northeast. You know, just let them just live their own little. It's like another little world over there, and obviously
it's
the way
another country up there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's not actually an area you associate with cricket so much. It's a football mad part of the world. I mean, growing up, Durham only became a county in 1992 when you were about 10 years old. Did you even think of cricket as a potential career?
Absolutely not, no. I didn't think sport was a potential career. I think the first time I really realised, when I got to play badminton at under 15s, and I started to realise that, like people like Nathan Roberts and Gail Emms, that they had an opportunity to make a living. And naturally, a bit inquisitive, I said, well, what kind of money can they earn if you win, like, a a gold at the Olympics or something like that, and someone said 30 grand roughly, and I was like, that's a lot of money. I was thinking that is a lot of money
to play badminton,
to do something that you love.
Yeah,
I was like, but of course I was playing tennis, so I was naturally thinking, well, I played county, county tennis, but I was never the best. I played cricket.
Graham keeps his options open and is about to go to university, but with cricket going well, Durham's Jeff Cook has other ideas. I'll let Graham pick up the story.
The only time I really realised is when, once again, I sat down at Austin's, which is the pub on the ground, and my mum and dad got called in, and I was around about 17 or 18 then, and Jeff Cook called us in, and I was literally just about to send me, is it UCAS forms that you do, and I wanted to go to either Loughborough, Liverpool or Northumbria Uni. Ideally, I wanted to get away from my parents and kind of live life a little bit and get away. And he literally just said, how do you fancy being a professional cricketer? And I was like, I just thought it was a joke. I said, yeah, it sounds pretty good. And he said, well, why don't you come in on Monday and you can bowl against the lads? We've got Martin Love coming in, and you can bowl against the lads. And of course, I think naturally my mum and dad were thinking, well, but you've got an opportunity now to go to university, learn about life a little bit. And I remember turning to my dad at first, and I said, well, Dad, what's your thoughts? But they both literally just said, well, if you want to do this, give it a go and we'll back you. Hmm. And it's literally the best bit of advice. Because I think as a parent, obviously being a parent myself now, is I think I find that quite hard to risk a potential proper job.
Yeah.
To potentially, like, you know, live your dream. And they just backed, you know, they just said, look, if you want to do it, go for it, we'll back you. I remember the whole weekend I was excited for Monday. It rained on the Monday morning, and we had some ridiculously spicy nets. So you couldn't use the grass wickets at all. It was slightly coming down, but there was a game starting on the Wednesday or something. Martin Love came over, so that we were part of the academy, we were over in the grass nets, and Jeff was saying, look, sorry, there's no nets available. But Martin Love came over and said, oh, well, I'll bat on the AstroTurfs. And Martin Love was an unbelievable player, really skillful. He had a lot of time on his hands, and I said, well, I'll bowl at Martin Love on these spicy AstroTurf nets. So he put his hand warmers underneath his hat, put his hat on, like, so he had his hat on,
yeah.
Put his helmet on top. So it was freezing, absolutely freezing, slightly, like, a little bit of drizzle in the air. And I ran in, I bounced him first ball, and he just, like, kind of ducked out of the way. But I didn't mean to bounce him. It comes back, I could ball quick, but I had no idea where it was going. And with a pretty decent ball, and I bowled at him a couple of times. He played and misses, played some great shots as well. And I think from that day on, I was like, this is great. Like, you got your lunch afterwards, and I was thinking, this is like, if this is a job, I want to give this the best crack I possibly can, because it's great fun.
And give it a good crack he does. In 2004, Graham makes his first class debut. Soon, he's a name to look out for. He takes 50 wickets in the county championship in 2006 and is called up by England. He doesn't play in the one-dayers against Pakistan and admits that's a good thing, but enjoys it nonetheless, despite the coach ignoring him.
I knew I was never ready. Like, I was just so excited. I was never ready to play one-day cricket then. I mean, I didn't have a good slower ball. I didn't have a Yorker. I didn't have the skills. I probably didn't have the mental skills neither to compete against Pakistan at the time. But I loved it. And I look back and I think, well, actually, I'm pleased I did that, because it just gave me another little life lesson of experience. But I mean, the funny thing with that one is, I remember checking in. It was at Southampton. And I checked in, I turned round and I walked, and Duncan Fletcher was walking towards me, and I was like, oh my God, that's Duncan Fletcher. So I walked over, and he literally walked straight past me, and I was like, Am I supposed to say something yet? Bearing in mind, I'm just a young kid. I'm just, you know, kind of loving life at the minute. And then it dawned on me, and I was thinking, he's got no idea who I am. So he's obviously, he's the head coach of England. He doesn't really, he wasn't really watching county cricket. He's went to the selector and said, pick me the guy who bowls the quickest, or pick me the guy who's doing okay at the moment. He had absolutely no idea. I think even the next day, I turned up in me kit. He still had no idea. But eventually I was like, hi, I'm Graham Onions. And he was like, hiya. And then that was it. That was it, really. Obviously that series, I remember Shaw Bakhtar running and bowling literally 95 mile an hour. I was thinking, wow, this is the big, you know, the big league, really.
Fair enough. I actually saw Ollie Pope recently down at Lord's, and he did look like he's on work experience. He was so young, I couldn't believe it.
By 2009, Graham's ready for international cricket. It's early season and he's playing for Durham away to Somerset when the phone rings. Normally, most people would be happy to hear from the national selector.
It was day two. I got a phone call, and it was stupid o'clock in the morning. It was 7 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And it was Jeff Miller, and he said, "Oh, hi Graham, it's Jeff here." And I was like, "Look, it's early in the morning. Not now." I was obviously thinking it was a dodgy, so I put the phone down. I honestly didn't think anything of it. And I think obviously Jeff expected me to know who Jeff was, and I didn't. And he rang me back up about 5 minutes later, and he said, "Oh, Graham, it's Jeff Miller here from England." I felt groggy. I said, "Sorry, you've just tried to ring it. I think you've got the wrong number." And before I could put the phone down, he was like, no, it's Jeff Miller from England." So I was like, "All right, okay." Once again, I was still fast asleep, and I was like, "All right, okay." He said, "Well done, you've been selected to play for England, to be in the squad, to play against the West Indies." And I was like, "All right, thanks. That's great." He said, "Okay, I tell you what I'll do is I'll speak to you in about 45 minutes when you've got yourself up and you're ready to go." So I was like, "Right, okay, no problem." Kind of put the phone down. And I kind of drifted a little bit. And I was thinking, that's the day which I thought, I've just been picked to play for England. I'm going to go to Lord's. I'm actually going to be part of like the England side. And of course, and then I started to think, well, yeah, this is it. This is kind of the hard work that I've put in has got me to this stage. Now, naturally, I thought, well, Harmy's been picked as well.
Yeah.
I honestly didn't think. How can I get picked ahead of Steve Armisen? Absolute Durham legend. Taken so many wickets, I couldn't even tie his laces. Like, he was so hands down one of the best bowlers in the world, and he basically hadn't been picked. So because I went down to breakfast, and he told me, he said, "Oh, Bunny, congratulations! Like, you've been obviously with you." And I was like, "How do you know this?" But obviously he's been told that he hadn't been selected, and they've gone with me. At the time, I didn't probably know exactly how to deal with it. I didn't say, "Look, Harmy, I'm really sorry." I was just, "Oh, thanks very much." He must have been feeling terrible. He must have been thinking, "Oh, well, I want to play for England still." He just said, "Well done, you know, back yourself." So we scored a few runs the next day. A lot of talk was about me on Sky. We scored a few runs. And then anyway, we bowled literally for a day and a half. Justin Langer and Trez got loads of runs. They ended up getting like 450. Game fizzled out to a draw, and then all of a sudden the next thing I got man of the match, and it was just a massive press thing about, right, you're going to go and play against the West Indies. How are you going to deal with the pressures? Well, I'm just going to enjoy it. That's what Harmy told me. He said, "Look, just go and enjoy it. You've got your overs under your belt, go to Lord's and enjoy it." There's no better place than going to Lord's and enjoying it, is there? It's an amazing place.
When you turned up at Lord's, I guess there would have been a squad then. So did you know you were in the starting 11? At what point were you made aware of that?
I was told the day before, the night. So I'd actually rather it be that way. I could sleep on it. And I remember Steve Bull, the psychologist at the time. And I you never have a psychologist at Durham. I mean, they didn't have the... Well, they were tough from the northeast, and you're just like, psychologist, what's one of those type of thing? And so the when I talked earlier in the podcast is like the hardened nature of people from the northeast, and before I got selected to play for England, I had stress fractures in my shins. I had times out of the game that made me tougher, that made me more ready for that call. Andrew Strauss at the time said, look, you're gonna play, and Tim Bresnan was gonna play at the time, and we were like, this is amazing. But then the lead up to that was that there was like 2 or 3 days of rain, and I love to bowl before games. I like to get in the rhythm, and I always have, and I still do that now. And I said to Steve Ball at the time, I feel as though I'm ready, but I just haven't bowled for 3 days. I need to bowl. He said, Graham, you've probably bowled 200 overs in, you know, 6 championship matches, or 4 championship matches. You've bowled loads. You're ready. You're fine. And it was the only time which I thought, am I ready? You know, am I ready? And I put that down to just nerves now. I just think I just wasn't quite backing myself.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Well, he was ready, and luckily for Graham, the West Indies decide to field first. It means he can nip over to the nursery ground and have a bowl in the nets, whilst his teammates rack up 377 all out. Then, on day two, it's his time to shine.
I was just desperately just, you know, give me the ball, come on, I want to get into it. Because everyone said, look, as soon as you get out there, just try and, you know, feel the feet on your ground, your feet on the ground, and just try and get in the game as quickly as I can. Of course, it took a bit of time to get that first ball in my hand.
Yeah, they gave it. Graham Swann opened the bowling.
Yeah, so there was a bit on their left hand, as in obviously Shiv. Weakness against spin. I mean, Chip's an unbelievable player. It was one of the first times actually I noticed about team talks and chats and stuff, where normally at Durham you would just go out there and you would bowl, use your skills. I just remember thinking, give me the ball, I want to just get in the game. And then of course naturally it didn't start particularly well. I think I might have went for 2 fours in my first over. I might have went for 15 in my first 2 overs or something. And I think I did an interview a long time ago and thinking, oh, I didn't feel as though I was good enough, which I disagree with now. I probably just tried a little bit too hard. It was swinging a little bit. I tried to swing it where I can swing it, but I'm naturally trap the batter on, you know, pitch it full, people play back, and I'm more of a skiddy, hit the seam type of bowler. I found a bit of rhythm. I got a ball that was just angled in a little bit, nipped off the seam, and Lendl Simmons off the back foot, nicked off the shoulder of the bat, decent pace. And Andrew Strauss caught it. A really, really good catch, high above his head. Massive celebrations.
It will be Simmons who is edging it. Caught! Bought it first slip. Lifting delivery. Onions gets his first test wicket.
England on fire. Great delivery there by Onions. Climbed outside the off stump. Simmons couldn't really get out of the way of it. Caught the glove. Caught it. What was it, first slip, Tony?
First slip.
Yes. Great delivery by our Graham Onions.
For the second time in the innings, wickets with successive balls.
When you take the wicket, you get goosebumps and you get a little bit nervous then, because you think, right now I'm in. And you get that feeling of, I suppose, the feeling of what Test match cricket is all about. You're competing against the best players in the world. All these people are watching England and I'm part of that team. Which I thrived on, I loved, I enjoyed it. I can understand how people would maybe put themselves under massive pressure. I loved it. I just thought, if I'm only going to play a handful of test matches, I'm going to enjoy it.
As Onions is on the way to Taylor, and Taylor is getting a ball down the leg side, and there's an appeal. He's out caught behind, down the leg side. Careless shot by Taylor. A ball way down the leg side, swung at it, got an under edge. Good catch by Pryor, and the West Indies tumbling here. Taylor goes without scoring. 117 now, as Onions is on the way to him now, and he's edged it. He's out caught at third slip. So all of that really came to almost nothing. Out for two. Brilliant catch at third slip. England are snaffling everything. The West Indies dropped almost everything that came their way after tea yesterday, and a good catch. So four wickets have now fallen in seven deliveries, and the West Indies are 119 for eight, and not much to come. Thick outside edge, and a good catch to his left. Tumbling over, swan the fielder.
And then I remember getting a few more wickets. Ball pretty nicely. I remember getting rammed in, which I would class as like my wicket type, kind of, you know, trapped LBW ball, a little bit of wobble seam and like nipping it back. Obviously got... I think it was Jerome Taylor, maybe he's caught down the leg side. That was a bit of a lucky one, bit of a drag down. But I remember just running in, feeling really good, really happy with what I'd done before that game, and then led into that test match and feeling great, really.
And it's Onions who's had this tremendous spell. In he goes and bowls on the middle stump. Peel flag before wicket, and he's given him out. LB and Onions has fallen over, and he's flat on his back. Well, like a spider on his back, but nowhere to go, waving his arms and legs around, and he's hauled up by his teammates. It looked pretty straight from here, and Mr. De Silva, the Sri Lankan umpire, nodded his head before raising his finger. Onions gets another one, 4 for 24, and looking at it, it's straight. It's knee roll area of the pad. He's a tall man, Onions. The only thing to consider was the height. And flat on his back like a turtle. What he was up to there, whether he lost his foot or what it was. But anyway, 4 for 24. West Indies 249 behind. They're collapsing here. Yeah. Dramatic start.
The final wicket was Lionel Baker, another LBW. At that point, you're on debut, you've taken four wickets. There was a lovely catch by Graham Swan off Sullivan Bend in the gully region. You're suddenly thinking, right, I'm one wicket away from getting on the honours boards.
The honours board never even crossed my mind.
Really?
No, honestly, it didn't. I was brought up by people like Dale Benkenstein, who was captain at the time, and Michael Hussey, and they're massively on, you know, winning games, fifers, big hundreds, and I wasn't getting that ball, was never getting out of my hand. I was thinking that this is my opportunity to try and obviously take a fifer.
His Onions, he bowls to it. It could be LBW, I think. It must be, and he's got his five wickets in his first test match at Lord's. A wonderful day for Graham Onions. It didn't begin very well because he got a first ball duck, but he has taken five wickets, the first to do that at Lord's since Jimmy Anderson in his first test here. 150, his first test in England, that was for Anderson. 152 all out, the West Indies. Baker, LBW, Onions, 17. And on this overcast afternoon, as soon as the umpires decide that the light is fit, I am sure that the West Indies will be asked to follow on. But it may be a slight delay. But well done, Onions. He's the hero of the hour.
But the honours board never honestly crossed my mind. And then it was actually KP that said, you know, you you're on the board, mate, you know, and, you know, show everybody the ball. And I was unbelievably embarrassed to do it. But I've got a great picture where...
And England taking their time to leave the field, and Onions will lead them off.
I'm facing away from the pavilion. Everyone else is facing that way, and I'm showing the ball to my mum and dad, who had probably had about 3 bottles of Prosecco each. Everyone just kept buying them drinks. I was thinking, how is that? I'm doing the hard work, and they're getting lashed in the stand. But that moment there was you know, kind of for them. It was a shame that I didn't have my sister. I eventually got like my best mates to come to different games and stuff, but it was amazing to have my mum and dad there, because, you know, they deserved that, really. They deserved to kind of be part of that day. As I said, as a parent myself now, I couldn't think of anything better than watching someone that you love so much to do so well. And it was a surreal day. It was something that, you know, it's nice to talk about this now, because it was amazing. It was really special.
England wrap up victory by 10 wickets, and Graham picks up 2 more in the second innings. It's quite a summer as he goes on to win the Ashes, playing in 3 of England's tests against the Aussies. But before that, he walks out against the West Indies at Chesterley Street in the second test of that series. A proud moment for a son of the North East.
This is what dreams are made of. So all the hard work, born at Martin Love, in the net out the back.
Yeah.
Was it stays in my mind massively. I remember Jeff Cook thinking, you're making bowling look very easily in the nets out the back. I just felt at home, you know. I felt as though I was ready. Well, obviously I was at home, because I was at Durham, but I just felt as though I was, you know, I was really kind of getting part of that team leading into, as you said, you know, an Ashes series. I mean, an Ashes series against Australia, against the biggest players in the world, the biggest series in the world, where everybody watches, and I'm part of it.
That summer must really stick out for you, I guess, 2009, because Durham win the county championship again, you make your England debut, England win the Ashes, you're part of that. Was that, I mean, it sounds obvious to say, that must have been sort of the pinnacle of your cricket career?
People say in the zone. I wasn't in the zone, but I was just loving it. I just felt as though I was running in lovely, had long strides, I had a lovely hold at the crease, and I could bowl. I remember thinking that I knew where the ball was going for once. You know, I felt as though I wasn't just bowling short. I was had the ability to pitch the ball up and swing it. I could seam it a little bit. But I was also playing against absolute legends of the game. It wasn't all good. I played against Australia. At Headingley, we got ball up for 100. Ricky Ponton came out and started just smacking me into the stand. My natural back of a length.
Yeah. He pull it.
He was just pulling it into the stand, and I went for a lot of runs. I was thinking, right, back down to the harsh reality that these are, you know, incredibly good players. But I kind of didn't back down. You know, I remember Marcus North got a big 100, who I'm good friends with now. Lives in the North East, and we talk about it all the time. You know, and he. I was still very young. I was still just a young kid that was still playing for England, and I was given this opportunity. So I was still happy with the way I was born, and I was just enjoying that period of my life.
And the other thing at that point, Lily Allen said that she fancied you. Can you remember that? That was on TMS at the time, around 2009. Like, she was in the TMS box, and she basically said she had the hots for Graham Onions.
You can't blame her, can you? Honestly, that period of time, that moment, I was thinking, Lily Allen? Really? So people are going, oh yeah, Lily Allen came in the paper and stuff. And I remember one of the things, I had my top off, I had my little love handle on and stuff like that. And I met her at the Oval. I wasn't playing, so I was gutted. Steve Harmison played instead of me, which I was pleased for Steve. You know, it was the last test match at the Oval, and all the lads, so the lads were on the field, and all the lads were like, oh, there's Lily Allen down there. And I was like, where? I didn't really know much about her. Heard about her. She was like, oh, she's down there. I was like, where? So anyway, she turned round and she waved at me. Naturally, I waved, which is the worst thing you probably could have done. And she had like a fluffy beer hat on, So like her face was the beer and the foam.
Was she in fancy dress?
She was fancy dress. And I was like, oh my word. But all the lads were like giving us loads of stick. But of course we won the Ashes as well. So can I just make it clear that I had a girlfriend at the time as well, though. So
who's now your wife?
Now your wife. But once again, it was like, oh, this is publicity. This is what playing international cricket comes with. I met her properly at a PCA dinner.
Right.
And then that's when I started talking and I said, oh, hiya, nice to meet you, how are you doing?
Yeah.
I think I said, like, your music, but I had no idea what she sang. But she was nice. She was nice. She just, to be honest, I don't really know what she saw. I think she said that she really fancies Andrew Flintoff, but Graham Onions is all right or something like that. I think that she said. So I think, yeah, Fred can have her.
That winter, England head to South Africa and draw the series 1-1, thanks to some gritty rearguard batting from Graham. Twice he's the last man standing as England cling on for two nail-biting draws, the first of which is at Centurion.
The first time, I kind of understand, you know, we batted for like almost 2 days. Fielded a vet ball beautifully at one of the games. Collie got off strike, which was outrageous. I said to him now, I said, I'm pleased I saved this game, because you should never have took a three or a single or whatever it was at the time. I think I faced a couple from Morkel and I faced six from Mantini for the last over, and they were shattered, absolutely knackered. They'd been in the field for ages, and Mantini was bowling relatively slow, and he didn't make me play really. He bowled a little bit too wide, so I left it. The old faithful, you know, fist up. Kind of embarrassed, didn't really know what to do, but it was great. Everybody was jumping all over me, so that was great. But I was ready. I was happy with me bowling, me batting. That's a bonus. And obviously in Cape Town, beautiful setting, one of the best places I've played. You know, it happened again. Just the second time it happened, it just happened really quickly. So we're in a great position. I think Ian Bell got out. He nicked off. Collie got out. It just went bang, 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 and I was like, "This is going to happen again." But I quickly put my kit on, sat down, another wicket, went out there, and then me, obviously, good mate Swanee was out there, and he's great, Swanee, because he started talking in Geordie with his, you know, pretending Geordie accent and stuff, and I just said to him, I said, "I would rather face Morkel, and you can face Steyn." He was like, "Fine, no problem, happy with that." And then just the way it worked, the last over, I faced a few more balls that time. I think it was last over, I think it hit me thigh, but a ball got stuck in my grill. Dumini was like snarling at us and stuff like that and saying like, oh, you're petrified. So I got the ball out of my grill and passed it to him. There was a massive appeal for a caught behind, referred or whatever it was, but I didn't hit it, hit my shoulder. Blocked a Yorker out and then left it, and then I did the old lifting my fist again. So brilliant. I absolutely loved it. One of my best moments then is I didn't play the last test at Johannesburg, and Jack Callis, who I bowled really well at, I got him out once in a series, didn't get many wickets, but I bowled beautifully. I was like really settled in that team, but obviously I didn't play that last test match. That was good. Naturally, at the end of every series, you go and you have a beer with your legends, with the legends of the game. And Jack Callis just came up to me. We're all walking out. He said, "Oh, like Graham, can I have a word?" I said, "Jack Callis." And I was like, "Yeah, no problem. What's he going to say? That I'm rubbish or something?" And he said, "Look," he said, "you've bowled absolutely beautifully." I said, "If you keep on bowling like that, you'll be absolutely fine. You'll have a long career." And I was like, I was just taken back. You know, I was very much, I just wanted to sit down and talk to him more. But we're going on the coach, and the lads are like, "Come on, we've got to go. We had a flight the next day and stuff." And I just, from that day on, it's just when I've gone through bad times, I've always thought he is what I would class as the best all rounder ever. Said to me that I was a good cricketer. Didn't say I was a world beater. Didn't say that I bowl quick or whatever. He just said that if you keep doing what you're doing, you'll have a long career. And I was like, well, that's all I need to hear, really.
But then, sadly for you, you picked up an injury before the 2010-11 Ashes out down under, which you would have been probably nailed on to go to, because at this point you were doing well in that England side. I think it was a stress fracture to your back.
Yeah, I had a L5 stress fracture, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't want to finish the podcast on a downbeat note, but, yeah, Jacques Callis said you've got a long career ahead of you, but in the end you never quite had it. How do you sit here feeling now that you, in the end, you only played 9 Test matches for England?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I've got to deal with, really, is maybe I was only good enough to play 9 Test matches, but maybe I was cut short because of my injuries, and I think everyone says that, which I found it hard to deal with, and that's a little bit of, I mean, without a doubt you get depression when you're injured, because you desperately want to do as well as you possibly can. What a lot of people don't realise is that you work so hard, you're playing for England, you're loving life, you're touring the world, you know, just got married, everything was all good, simply contracted, boom, I was injured, went to Bangladesh, got injured, and I was like, literally, I missed 18 months. And to go from there to literally rock bottom and lose everything and basically start again was the really hard thing to take. But I was, in a way, I made a pact to myself that I wanted to play one more game. I just wanted to play one more game, because actually the surgeon, you know, he said, look, I can put a screw in your back, but it's a little bit unknown about where you're going to be afterwards. And I thought, well, I'm not going to play again, so I'm going to just give it my best shot just to play one more game. And it was one more game for England, you know, to try and get back to prove to myself and to people, maybe it's the surgeon that doubted me a little bit that I might not get back there, to basically prove that I could get back to that, the pinnacle, where I felt as though I deserved to be after that South Africa series, and hearing what Jack Callis had said. And cut the long story short, through all the hard work, as you know, I did it again. And then I actually felt as though I was a better bowler. You know, coaches around the time kept saying, you've lost pace, you haven't got the same, you're not the same type of bowler.
But in the summer of 2013, Graham's the leading wicket taker in the country, picking up 70 scalps at 18.45 as Durham win their third county championship. That winter, it's the Ashes down under, so surely he'll be on the plane to Australia. Not so. The selectors opt for 3 big quicks, Chris Tremlett, Boyd Rankin and Stephen Finn, who they say are better suited to Australian conditions. It's a selection that still hurts.
That selection for me was probably the hardest part of my career. I remember sitting in my house, there was talk about getting a phone call, and I've never been so excited for a phone call from Jeff Millan all my life. Bearing in mind, I put the phone down and on my debut, I was thinking, I'm excited for this phone call. I can't wait to go and tour England, to tour with England again. And he rang me, and I was like, hi, it came up Jeff Millan. I was like, hi Jeff, how are you doing? So excited. And he went, have you got a couple of minutes? I was like, yeah, no problem. It honestly didn't even cross my mind that I potentially wouldn't get picked. And he said, look, Graham, sorry, you haven't been selected to go to Australia. So I said, sorry, I don't understand. He said, look, if you've got any questions, please bring Andy Flower. I said, Jeff, I'm gobsmacked. You know, is there any way that you can maybe give me, you know, a bit more of a reason, maybe why? He said, well, we've selected the side on players that we feel can do better in Australian conditions. Obviously, I'm thinking, well, I don't agree with you, but it's not a bad reason. I can understand a little bit, but then he was very quick to get off the phone. I had so much that I wanted to talk to him about and say, like, you know, why? Like, who's been selected? Am I not better than these guys? So anyway, I got very angry. I got disappointed. I just think I don't understand, you know, why. And I never got a phone call from Andy Flower. I didn't get a text. I didn't ring him, which I suppose was a bit of a bad thing at the time. I maybe should have just kind of, you know, cleared the air a little bit and thought, right. And Alistair Cook rang me, and I just said, look, I don't get it. I don't understand. Like, I'm, and he said that you're right to not understand, but these are the reasons. He went into a little bit more detail. The problem that I had is he would tell me things, and I would basically, I'd have an answer for him. I'd say, well, I don't, but what about this, and what about that? And there were good arguments to have, and absolute full respect for Alistair Cook. I really appreciate him ringing me and kind of clearing the air a little bit, really. But naturally, it was a real bitter pill to swallow, really. That was a real tough period, and if I'm being honest, I never thought I would have got back to where I wanted to be.
Did you realise then that was probably your England career over?
Well, there's only a certain amount. I spend so much time from injury trying to get back and doing well. I naturally thought, I'm not sure if I can do that again. Like, I'm fit, I'm doing well. I'm not sure if I can do all this energy and putting my body through it for like a false hope as such. But then I did it anyway, and I've had a good career with Durham. And if I didn't have that ultimate drive, then I wouldn't be here now, and I wouldn't be playing for a great. I wouldn't have had a benefit year at Durham. I wouldn't have had a great career, and a career still going on with Lancs. So I did manage to get over it, and kind of, you know, believe that I deserve to play professional sport. And I've still got to think, you know, I say to my wife all the time, what could it have been? Could I have played more games? And she's like, Graham, you've played nine games for your country. It's an amazing achievement, and she's right.
Yeah, I mean, you are probably one of the most unlucky players not to have played more during their generation. Just wanted to finish on that point. Did you ever feel that you were unlucky in that you were too much like the kind of the premier bowlers at the time, like Anderson and Broad? Like, your style was more suited to be like them, and they, England, were looking for something different, a kind of Bresnan or a Tremlett type bowler.
Yeah, I mean, I got compared a lot to Jimmy, and a lot of the reasons for not being selected was you can't have two Jimmy Andersons in your team. Well, I would argue to say that you could have three Jimmy Andersons in your team. You'd have a you know, a really good side, and you'd win a lot of Test matches, especially in English conditions. I kept getting told, you know, sorry, you haven't been selected. Go back and take wickets for Durham, and I did it, and I still never got picked. So I know in my mind whether or not your face doesn't fit, or the you know, Andrew Strauss, Andy Flower wanted something a bit different. That's their call. I mean, I'd love to know really their reasons behind it. I've got to finish my kind of career. My England career is obviously over. I've got to just appreciate that I probably wasn't the best bowler at the time to get into that Test side, and I've kind of learned to live with that now. But the one thing which I did do is I gave myself literally the best chance I possibly could. They said take wickets. I did. I mean, they told me that I wasn't playing one game. I got in the car, went to Trent Bridge, and took 9 wickets. I couldn't have done much more, and I'm very proud of what I've done, really. So that's where I stand. Hopefully, I don't sound bitter, because I think I've got ultimate respect for Cook, Strauss at the time, Andy Flower. They gave me an opportunity to even be around that setup, the selectors, Jeff Miller. Naturally, I wanted to play more. I wanted to play. If I played 9, I wanted to play one more. I wanted to play 10. I wanted to play as many as I possibly could. I played 9 games, so I'm absolutely delighted with that, really. I'm very lucky with all the work I've done that I'm still playing, and I'm still loving it. I've got an amazing two kids, Oliver, who's five, and Esme, that's three. I've got an unbelievable wife that stood by me through some pretty tough times, but she's enjoyed some good times as well. So we're kind of, now that I'm playing for Lancashire, we're kind of apart a little bit, but the future is going to be great. You know, I know it is. She's allowing me to fulfil still a lot of my dreams that I've got, and I thank her for that, really. And obviously my mum and dad, they've had some good times, so hopefully a few more to come.
It's been great going down memory lane, and many England fans, I'm sure, will enjoy listening to this, and especially sort of going down memory lane on that summer of 2009, which was very special for England and very special for you.
Lovely. Thanks, Will. Thanks for listening, guys. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Lords Cricket Podcast, with the stories from the home of cricket, with the people that made them. That was Graham Onions. It was really good fun to sit down and chat with Bunny. He's someone I've known for a few years now. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. I certainly enjoyed recording it with him. I think he was a little bit worried towards the end that he was coming across as being a bit bitter about that selection where he didn't go down under to the Ashes in that, well, it was a fated trip for England, really. They got absolutely thrashed. So maybe in the end it was better off that he didn't go. But I don't think it came across that way. I think one thing that really did sort of stick out for me is that he did everything he could. Every time he was asked to take wickets, he took wickets. And I do believe that he is sort of at peace with it all, so to speak. And as he says, you know, you can look at it that way, you can get bitter about it, or you can think, well, I played 9 test matches for England, which he did, and achieved so much. So yeah, a real big thanks to Graham for sitting down and taking the time to record the podcast. It was, as I've just mentioned, really good fun. And he's still going strong. At the time of putting this out, he's taken 56 wickets for Lancashire, and he's 36 years young. So congratulations on that. I hope you enjoyed the show. Please do give it a rating. It does help to get the podcast out there, up the iTunes charts and all that, and more people can listen to it, and that would be great. You can also subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter. We're at Home of Cricket. Or follow me personally. I'm at WillRowe2. You can also contact the show by email on podcast@mcc.org.uk. Also, a big thanks to the BBC and ECB for the use of those commentary clips. And it was lovely there to hear the great dulcet tones of the legendary West Indies commentator, Tony Kozier, who's sadly no longer with us. Right, next week's episode is with Graham Foxy Fowler. Foxy is one of the game's great characters. He played for England during the 1980s. He's a Lancashire man. He moved to Durham, the inverse of Graham Onions, really, if you think about it that way. And scored 3 test centuries. One of them was here at Lords against the great West Indies attack of that era. We, of course, chat about that. But we also chat about so much more. Foxy is one of those true storytellers. And I've got to admit that half the podcast is just me sort of giggling at some of the anecdotes and yarns that he tells. So it's not one to be missed. It's out next Monday. The Lords Cricket Podcast is a weekly show, and so the next one is with Graham Foxy Fowler. I do hope you can have a listen to that, because it is great fun. So that's next week's Lords Cricket Podcast with Graham Fowler. Once again, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.